Moses, now far away from Egypt, meets God through a burning bush and becomes, or starts to become, the leader who goes before the people. Abraham Joshua Heschel talks about the prophet being one who feels deeply what God feels. Now, as we consider the chapters that will touch on the burning bush, what do these things convey or disclose about the nature of God, his relationship to the world, and Moses' mission? And why is the revealing of God's name significant in the development of the story of God and his people? Well, welcome to The Good Word. We continue our series on the book of Exodus. I am your host, Tiago Ahais, and I'm joined by my conversation partners, Dr. Matilda Fry and Dr. Jody Washburn. Hello, friends. Here we are again, about to be very disappointed about the lack of time we have to discuss so many great things on these great chapters of the book of Exodus. So here we are, chapters 3 and 4. This is significant. I think of all the chapters of Exodus, I think chapter 3 is the one I've spoke to. If I'm going to think about which chapter have I talked about the most in the Exodus, I think 3 is at the top of my list. But what is more meaningful to you? And let's just start with this. What is more meaningful to you in this chapter? Is it Moses' calling and how that dynamic happens? Is it the divine disclosure of his name and what that means? Or is it all of the weird and strange events that happen toward the end of chapter 4? What stands out to you guys the most?
I think all of it is strange. First of all, a bush burning and not burning down. And of course, Moses like curious, what is this about? And he does not understand. And so we have that beautiful story of Moses coming close, take off the shoes, and this is holy ground, and so on. And that is definitely a part that we like to emphasize and speak about. But the revelation of God is bound to it in this short description here.
Yeah.
And it comes in unexpected ways that we are not able to foresee. We cannot pinpoint. It also vanishes just as fast because the place is gone. As soon as we leave the text, the burning bush is gone.
We don't know. I mean, before I go to Jody, we did have a Holy Lands tour back in the day. And if you go to, you know, Sinai Peninsula, I remember going there the first time. They took us to that, is it St. Catherine's Monastery down there? And there's, did you not see like a huge bush where it has a little sign saying this was the bush? And then I went back to study the Hebrew after that experience. It was like Tzenez, like this little bush. I said, I don't think they got it right there. But anyway, in case our listeners want to go see the burning bush, it disappeared rather quickly. But some people held on to the bush. You can see it right there in Sinai.
It's just interesting to me that God does not hold on to it. And so that counts.
I know. I love that. Jody.
Yeah. I you know, there are so many ways people interpret the disclosure of who this God is that's calling Moses toward this liberatory work. And many times we can get hung up on, you know, is this an etiological tale that helps us, you know, add depth to our meaning of the word Yahweh, you know, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh? Or is it supposed to be the empowerment of Moses? Like, what are we supposed to see here? And I think what strikes me the most, and this goes back to my advanced Hebrew studies with Jacques Toucan, and that is he would stress and he would receive no one could argue with him. He would say, this is not I am who I am. No, I will be who I will be. And to me, the more I study, and this will come back toward the end of the book of Exodus when we get to the Moses requesting to see the glory of God, right? But the more that I see and try to begin to wrap my mind around covenant relationship, the more I must understand it as a dynamic unfolding process where you must be affected by the other parties in this covenant relationship, and you must engage with each other in a way that it's a given that both parties are affected. And so it has become more and more significant to me that this this naming is in what we call imperfect, which means like incomplete action. Mm-hmm. In other words, God is not trying to say this is the static it, right? The final
word. The platonic
word.
Beyond
no,
time.
It is,
yeah.
It is an unfolding dynamic relational reality mm-hmm. that is being framed here. And the other piece that feels important to me is that it might be easy to say, oh, this is where we get introduced to the name of God.
Mm.
I think it's important to name the fact that it is back in the book of Genesis where you have the first naming of God by Hagar,
mm-hmm.
which means Hagar,
the
stranger, mm-hmm. the alien. And in that, Hagar names God, the one who sees me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't believe we can read these opening pages of Exodus without just kind of staying mindful of all the threads going to the Psalms and to Genesis and to other pieces of the Bible where that framing of the God who provides by seeing, mm-hmm. right, that God's sustaining presence comes through like seeing and responding to the people. And so it's not just that Moses saw the bush and turned aside to see what was this great sight,
mm-hmm.
but it's also that there's this interplay. The people are seeing God. God is seeing the people. And there's this responsive relational dance going on.
Relational dance. I'll take that for sure. I mean, yes. I can already hear Dukan speaking, our former professor back in the day, saying these things. No, you're wrong. Yes, this radical openness of God to his people to be affected by and affecting within this covenant dynamic is very true. And one thing that's very significant for us to mention on this point, actually, is the ending of the book of Genesis. We could have mentioned this in the previous lesson, but I think this is a great moment to bring it up. Ends with the promise of divine presence, that you're not going to be alone, that God will visit you. That's how literally the 50th chapter of Genesis ends, with the death of Joseph. Jacob had said it already, but this is, I'm going to read Genesis 50, verse 25. Then Joseph made the sons of Israel swear, saying, God will surely visit you. In the book of Genesis ends with the hope of this appearing.
Mm-hmm.
When will God show up? When will he appear? And that makes the whole transition the more dramatic because of that seemingly divine absence. When we open the pages of Exodus, we see life, we see the promises that God had made. They're starting to come to fruition. The people are multiplying, they're filling the land. We talked about in that last episode. But truly, throughout the whole first chapter, the question mark is there. When is God going to show up? Can't he see what is happening here? And that's why in the ending of chapter 2, we find these significant words that tie to what you're saying, Jody. I'm going to read chapter 2 of Exodus, verse 23. During those many days, the king of Egypt died. The people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. And their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God. And that's where God appears formally for the first time. And God heard their groaning. God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God saw the people of Israel. And God knew, which is a beautiful way. And I remember Richard Davidson talking about this new back in the day, Dr. Davidson saying that God, it's not that God had forgotten, right? God knew their cause. God was aware of these things, and God is not passive toward it all, which brings us back to the disclosure of the name. It's not just this static I am that is always there without any form of change or variation. No, it's the I will be. It's the God who opens himself and his story to embrace of people that will be a blessing and that will be a curse, that will have ups and that will have downs, and Exodus will flesh all these things out as well. Matilda, you're quiet there in the corner, and I'm assuming there's 30 things going through your mind, so let's go.
I believe what what we just talked about here is the what we call the theological extrapolation about the name of God,
mm-hmm.
and that is definitely a big element, and I believe we need to emphasize that the presence of God expressed through the four letters of the Hebrew word to be,
mm-hmm.
I am or I will be, mm-hmm. I am present, I'm with you, I'm there. But when you read it in the narrative form with the story that preceded it, where the midwives had no problem about who God is.
Mm.
They did what God wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Moses Now in chapter
because
three,
they feared God. That's what you're making reference. There's a fear. There's something that is responsive to God.
Correct. Okay. There was no request to understand who is this God, and what's the name, and
or
so
what
on.
Does he require?
Right.
They're just responding.
They just lived it out.
Mm.
Now we come to chapter 3 and 4, and here we have Moses. And Moses is the protagonist, is the main character of this entire story.
Mm-hmm.
And so Moses is in need to know who God is.
Mm-hmm.
Moses asks about the name. So Moses has to learn what the women already
know.
Knew.
I love that. I love that. And again, it's such a fascinating thing. It's almost like the women, the Hebrew midwives in the beginning of the book, already have a sense of what God desires for the whole people toward the end, right? That they will care for life, that they will care for flourishing, that, you know, wouldn't it be great if I didn't have to flesh out all of these laws so that you could know these simple things that they knew almost instinctively in the beginning of the book.
And think about the seventh woman, his wife, mm-hmm. at the end of mm-hmm. chapter 4, where we have this very strange story where the Lord comes to, like, put him to death.
Yeah.
And she takes the charge. She acts.
Mm-hmm.
She knows what to do.
Yeah.
Yep.
She understands what kind of God this is, who is the God of death and life, and if we did not mention it before, it is these seven women, mm-hmm. and she is the final one, the seventh one. They all are saving Moses' life.
Yes.
Yeah. There would be no Moses if it were not for the women's response to this divine desire, unstated desire, mm-hmm. because it's not like they were responding to a law or to a code.
It's a given. It's internal.
They have just embodied. So it's almost like an announcement of plot, if you will. That these women are sort of emulating what God desires for all of his people throughout the book of Exodus and onward into Torah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And again, not rigid, right? Because coming from a fundamentalist background, I remember being really troubled by, but the women, they lied. And
that brought me troubles in South America,
right?
Too.
As you sink into this story and you gain a sense of what you just described, that these women embodied God's respect for aliveness and this dynamic relational process. Suddenly, if they say, well, the Hebrew women, they're more vigorous, right?
Mm.
Well, you know, they knew what they needed to do.
Yeah.
They're not hung up on rigid application of things to hide behind.
Mm. I mean, I love this idea. I think of all go ahead, Matilda.
The final piece of that chapter 4, maybe we could take that as a forward pointing to the Passover story that we will discuss a bit later.
Mm-hmm. If there's blood here, there will be blood there.
Yes. Thank you.
Matilda. No, go ahead. No, we have 15 seconds, Matilda. Go ahead. Let's end with you. You were going to go somewhere. Go ahead. I was just agreeing.
No, we will remind ourselves of that again.
So let's just make a mental note here.
Yes.
This imagery will come back later.
Yes.
We'll do that. I like that. Well, my thanks go to my conversation partners, Matilda and Jody, our program engineer, Corin Bailey, to all of you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Thiago Ahais.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.